Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, June the 21st, 2022, and this is Blog Talk Radio, Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And if you're listening to this program, you expect to understand that the human rights violations worldwide are increasing. Even as we attempt to clarify and define human rights violations at home and abroad. And if you are a person who participates on this broadcast, it is because you are opposed to oppression, because you want to understand and analyze oppression. And it's because you've come to the conclusion that the problem with the world is a capitalism, and that capitalism, biggest ally, is the American capitalist system, and that everybody else within this system is a victim in a colony. And that's what capitalism does. It rapes the entire world. And we are here to find the solution. We're here to build solidarity because we recognize that it will never change, to quote Sam Archer's song, unless we do something about it. So without further ado, Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. As Sister Betty just read, our topic for this evening, human rights violations worldwide are increasing, even as we attempt to clarify and defy human rights violations at home and abroad. Now, that tells us that the world is a very dark place today. When they talk about the Dark Ages, I kind of take exception to that term, the Dark Ages, being a person of color. It was ages of no enlightenment. And here we are today where the lack of an enlightenment is obvious, and yet the American public is willing to let Julian Assange be brought back to this country and prosecuted. What we know they're trying to do is kill Julian Assange and the American public, the American left, the American progressives have not mounted a struggle to bring light. There is an extreme lack of light, and the American public doesn't want to know about that. And so I'm going to just go to a few quotes of people who have spoken before this, and we're going to talk about some of the solutions to the problems. One of the things that I noticed, we look at Broadway plays, and words from a Broadway play named A Strange Loop go like this. In a society that is doing its best to grind you into the dust, the best thing that you can do is to be yourself. Now, I have to add words to that. The best thing you can do is defend yourself and others who defend you. And another quote by a notable person, racism in America is like dust in the air. It seems invisible, even if you're choking on it until you let the sun in. Then you see it's everywhere. As long as we keep shining that light, we have a chance of cleaning it. And that was by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Light comes from various places. And our job here is to continue bringing light, shining light on situations, not in hopelessness, but in an attempt to solve the problems and in an attempt to understand others' people's problems, because they are our problems. As Reverend Edward Pinckney says, it is not about one thing, it's about everything. And we have to identify and ally ourselves with everyone's problem. And when we talk about our own problem, and our problem here is political prisoners, which we consider the root of everything. When people talk about reparations, I say, yes, reparations number one, free our political prisoners. Number two, a national health care program, and I could go on. Number three, abolish student debt. Free those minds up to do something. End charter schools. Bring the minds, the power of young minds into the arena of problem solving. Not like our two major political parties who kick everything down the road, and the next thing you know, we're going to have water up to our ears in every major city. And what will that cause? The next thing you know, we're not going to have growing seasons. What will that cause? And many years ago on this program, we said, immigration is not an issue. Migration is an issue. And what is the cause? What are the causes of migration? And so I've set up a lot of problems. We've spoken of a lot of problems. But we have people on this program who are going to give us some more problems to work upon, and they're going to bring their talents and their energy to solving these problems, and we must adopt these problems as our problems, because we know it is not about one thing, as Reverend Pinckney tells us, it's about everything. And people have already told us over and over again what the problems are, and a young lady, woman named Naomi Klein, had said, she wrote a book about disaster capitalism, and what she was talking about is how they take any disaster and make money on it. I say disaster capitalism is whenever there are a few people making money in capitalism, they create a disaster for the masses, and we have to deal with it. And closer to home, I remember our dear sister, Lynn Stewart, who passed before she passed, after she was freed from the death camps by people on this program. It can be done. We did it. We must expand those efforts and do it for people that we are not close to. As Lynn Stewart said, well, when you talk about one of the things she said so many things that angered the government at her. But one of the things she said was, we must remember when we talk about Puerto Rico, we are talking about our friends. When we talk about Puerto Rico, we are talking about our neighbors. And when we talk about Puerto Rico, we're talking about our families and relatives. We have to adopt their struggle for liberation. We have to adopt the struggle of the Haitian people for liberation. And I would say that we have to adopt the struggle to help Cuba survive, but it seems that Cuba is helping the rest of the world survive. But we must step in as people of conscience and start supporting all of these issues. Pick an issue and work on it. Well, it's time for me to stop and time to listen to what you have to say. And we will start with the same format that we have always had. Professor Louis, our genius poet, is taking a break to get his creative juices going again. And so we have prose and poetry by others. And a gentleman who understands what we mean when we say death camp is going to talk with prose or poetry. 7785, your phone is open.
Good evening, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty, all the listeners.
Good evening.
I'm certainly waiting forward to hear what all the information and all the discussion that we're getting ready to have. I have a poem tonight that actually fits perfectly in with what you laid out so far. And this is a poem called Oppression Is, and it's by Brother Kamu Zulu Damali, a revolutionary prisoner. And it goes, oppression is slave boats, shackles, and bloody whips. Infants being tossed out of ships, women being raped, men being eviscerated, wizened to wimps. Oppression is the mugging of Africa, Asia, Australia, and what is known as the Americas. Oppression is HIV/AIDS orchestrated by Europe to destroy entire villages and to orphan millions of children. Oppression is rapacious faces with blue eyes, lost, black, brown, red, yellow men strapped with Tech 9, and abused little babies with never-ending cries. Oppression is the United States House of Representatives, where bills are passed to manufacture more prisons that keep the wealthy ones rich and the poor ones in check by way of truth in sentencing. Oppression is the U.S. military invading nations in the name of democracy and liberation when its true aim is plunder and subjugation. Oppression is the death penalty where hundreds of innocent people reside, where close to 1,000 over the years have met their demise, where government decides who dies, what week, what day, year, what time. Oppression is the FBI and DEA who infest economically disadvantaged communities with drugs and guns to justify modern-day slavery. Oppression is immense hunger and starvation, utter poverty, unemployment, and capital exploitation. Oppression is police brutality, violent beatings, excessive shootings, racial profiling, false imprisonment, and they claim to serve and protect humanity. Oppression is the Department of Corrections where injustice, persecution, and repression is the normal practice. Oppression is the United States government.
Well, thank you so much for that. And as always, the poetry or the prose leave us so much to think about. Think about this one. The program is archived. You can go back and listen to it and talk about it. Oppression is America. I think the words were oppression, thy name is America. Sister Betty.
We have a special report that's going to be coming in tonight from California. And in preparation for that special report, we're going to ask Sister Ann, Comrade Ann, if she will get on and give us a summary of an article that she sent out far and wide. Ann, New York City, Jericho, thank you again for enlightening us. Can you give us that summary or a paragraph or two?
I'll give you a couple of paragraphs from this summary. It is really, really amazing. But as the poem that was just read was talking about, as we know, slavery still exists in this country, and it exists inside the prisons because the 13th Amendment clearly states that such is the case. So we really need to amend that. But anyway, the ACLU did this excellent report that incarcerated workers in this country produce, think of it, at least $11 billion in goods and services annually, but they only get pennies an hour for their prison job.
And you just repeat that very slowly.
Incarcerated workers in the U.S. produce at least $11 billion in goods and services annually, but receive just pennies an hour in wages for their prison jobs. This is a new report from the ACLU. And about 800,000 incarcerated people hold jobs in state and federal prisons. And they're often compelled to work in difficult and dangerous jobs without any labor protections and little or no training while making close to nothing. And most incarcerated workers are doing general prison maintenance that is crucial for keeping the facilities running, right? So you have a captive and exploited workforce, and the state governments and the federal prison system claim they can't afford to pay them a living wage. Amina, amina. So most of the people who are incarcerated are doing general prison maintenance. They're cleaning, they're cooking, they're repairing, they're doing laundry, they're doing other essential services, and they make an average of 13 to 52 cents an hour, an hour. Then there are seven states who absolutely pay nothing for most prison work. You just have to do it, and even though you don't get paid, and those who do get paid, see, a lot of their pay withheld for, and we quote and we unquote, taxes, room and board expenses, and court costs. Amina. So you're paying for your room and board while you're in prison? I don't think you should need to do that. So one of these people who works in the prison says, we are saving the prisons millions of dollars and getting paid pennies in return. All the jobs we're doing in prison are not benefiting us. It is benefiting the prison system. I can work a job. I work a job making $450 for a whole year. So then you have the COs and the sheriffs on the other side, and they say this. There's no way we can take care of our facilities, our roads, our ditches, if we didn't have innate labor, says Warren Yeager, a former Gulf County, Florida commissioner, right? And this other guy, Stephen Prater, who's a sheriff in Louisiana, said, we need to keep some out there. That's the ones that you can work to pick up the trash, the work release program. But guess what? Those are the ones that they're releasing, the good ones that we use every day to wash our cars, change oil in our cars, cook in the kitchen, and do all of that. And we save money. But they're going to let them out. And then if you say you're not going to work, you are subject to punishment ranging from solitary confinement to the loss of family visits to denials of sentence reductions. And more than 70% of prison workers said that they can't afford to even buy soap or phone calls with the money that they, the little pittance of money that they make. So, you know, it's really insane. So they generate goods and services that are worth $2.1 billion nationally in 2021. And it is estimated that the maintenance work of prisoners is worth $9 billion a year. But there's no centralized data for the value of this work, and the figure is probably an undercount and a rough estimate. So that $11 billion that we were talking about is probably more than that. So, you know, it's really disgusting, the whole thing about prison slavery that we've been fighting against for a long, long time and will continue to do so, whether it's in the federal prisons, the state prisons, the immigration jails, wherever it may happen to be. It should not be allowed to happen. Slavery is supposed to be abolished. Let's see if we can get it completely abolished. Because, you know, just because you're sitting in prison and maybe you committed a crime and maybe you didn't, you shouldn't have to be forced to work for pennies a day. Imagine making 13 cents an hour.
Right? Well, Anne, thank you so much for that report, but doesn't it make you cringe when the American government accuses some other government of using forced slave or imprisoned labor? Yes, they all do it, including America, and we have some people who are going to expand on that situation. And so would you hang in there, and we'd like to talk a little more about our political prisoners in jail. But Sister Betty?
Well, tonight we have a special report, and it's coming from a comrade, Lisa Knox, of the California Collaborative for Immigrant Justice. And she has some people who are sick and tired of being sick and tired, to quote our famous warrior, Fannie Lou Hamer, and they are doing something about it. In addition to that, we have Esperanza, and I hope I don't butcher this last name, Cuadro, and she's an advocate for the immigrants and the people who are struggling against oppression. And I don't want to steal their thunder, but Ann Lamb of New York City, Jericho, we're keeping your mic open. All right, Lisa and Esperanza, your mics are open. Whoever wants to go first, feel free.
And tell us.
Welcome.
Welcome, and tell us the problems you're dealing with.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much for having us on. This is Lisa. Honored just to share space with all of you. You know, and I think as we talk about prison labor, and as we all know, you know, the 13th Amendment abolished slavery except as punishment. So there's folks in prison who can be forced to work in slavery today. I want to talk about a specific type of prison labor, and that's what's happening in immigration prisons. So these are, for the most part, these are private for-profit facilities. Our federal government is contracting with corporations who are making a profit off of caging immigrants. And there's this legal fiction that it's not punishment, right? People are in immigration detention while they're fighting their deportation. But as we'll hear from some comrades in a moment, they're still being forced to work against their will. And so there's something they have, they call it the voluntary work program in these private immigration prisons, where folks work for a dollar a day, And they basically keep the facilities running. You know, they're cleaning their dorms, their bathrooms, they're cutting hair, they're in the kitchen. They're doing all of the functions that need to happen to keep these places open. And they're doing it for a dollar a day so that these corporations can make profits. And so we have on the phone actually two organizers who are part of labor strikes that are happening right now at two of these for-profit facilities in the Bakersfield area. And so we'll hear from them. And I don't want to take up too much time because I think, you know, they're living this, they're leading this, and they should be the ones to share their story. But I'll turn it over to my comrade Esperanza, who's also been supporting this fight, to add a little more context.
Thank you.
Your microphone is open.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. Like Lisa shared, I'm also very thrilled to be sharing space with you all. And just to add a little bit more context to what Lisa was sharing right now, this is the second strike that is happening in a period of 8 months. There was an initial strike in late October of 2021, and that first strike, it happened because some of you may have heard about, you know, the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center, the lawsuit that was filed there, fighting for minimum wage for folks who are detained by GEO, the same corporation that's currently detaining folks in Kern County, both Golden State and Mesa Verde. So as soon as that decision came out and it was published, GEO here in Kern County decided they needed to cut down the number of porters because, you know, we were imagining they were afraid of something similar happening here in California as well and them being liable to have to pay minimum wage for folks. So they wanted to reduce the number of porters from 12 to 2 people, to 2 people per shift, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, to clean the whole facility, you know, the whole dorm that holds up to 80 to 100 individuals. And folks said, no, like, that's even more work for 2 individuals to be cleaning the whole dorm. And imagine, there's 4 dorms total in each facility. So then this prompted folks to speak up to demand that porter jobs be reinstated. And at the same time, you know, they were demanding for better working conditions because people are being provided, they're not being provided the right right equipment for them to be able to perform this job. They're given chemicals that they don't know how to operate, that don't know how they're supposed to be using. They're not provided with, you know, any training whatsoever. They were able to achieve most of their demands, and now 8 months later, they're being forced to launch another strike again, the aim to continue fighting not just for the minimum wage, but also to defend their own rights, to defend their dignity and be treated as human beings. And, you know, I'll hand it over now to our comrades, who I believe we have Serafin and Guillermo, who will be sharing more about, more in depth, the struggle that they're facing right now.
Go ahead, Guillermo.
Yes, thank you.
I think Serafin,
the microphone is open.
Yes, this is Serafin. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for having me in this space. And, yes, I would like to share a little bit of, you know, what has led us to initiate this labor strike that we're in right now, which is going on about 50 days now. And for us, you know, from the time that I've been in this facility, we are not treated as humans. The dignity and respect is not there. We continue to be treated as criminals. Whenever we leave a dorm, we're continuously being patted down. And this is really awful because, again, why am I being subjected to these pat-downs when I'm not doing anything? And this is even when we go eat. When we go eat and we come back, we're being subjected to these pat-downs, supposedly to ensure that there's no contraband being introduced to the facility, which is really outrageous. And this in itself, when we have the facility administrator, which is like the warden in here, and he comes and he talks to us, he does so in a condescending way, and he belittles us, and there's no respect. We're not treated as people. We're being forced to work. A dollar a day is outrageous for an 8-hour shift. And even then, this is supposed to be a voluntary work program. However, it's not really like that. They're using tactics in order to manipulate people into forced labor. If I choose to not sign up for this voluntary work program, they take recreational activities away from us. It's already hard enough, the conditions to be living in here, where I can't even look outside the window because it's sandblasted. It's really oppressive in here, where there's really no programming, no activities for us to pass the time with. And, you know, when they take away the little bit that they do provide for us, it makes it even worse. This actually makes doing this little bit of time that I've been in here worse than, you know, in a prison sentence. And that's pretty harsh. And for us, you know, working for a dollar a day at the end of the week, if you work 5 days, $5 doesn't get you anything. A 15-minute video call costs $3.15. An 8-ounce bag of rice on commissary costs $2.75. So if I get $5 a week for cleaning, that doesn't amount to anything. I'm not gonna have money for anything, really. So these are just some of the things that, you know, for us that we're trying to fight for. If we get the California state law minimum wage of $15 an hour, how we're supposed to be, because I'm not in prison, and, you know, this should be enough for me to be able to sustain myself while I find my immigration case. And at the same time, you know, it's really hypocritical that, you know, for most of us, because of our immigration status, I'm not able to go and apply for a legitimate job on the streets. Yet, however, in here, they can hire me and pay me, you know, pennies just to work. This is really outrageous, and this is what continues to happen, and this is something that for us in here, we want to be treated as people and as humans, and we want to put a stop to this.
Well, thank you so much for that. Several things. You've heard just a little bit of what's happening. We will hear more tomorrow night on 99.5 on your FM dial. That's WBAI Pacifica. We will go. We will have these same people back talking about the situation. And I say to our audience, what does this remind you of? It is not the AFL-CIO supporting or helping these striking workers or encouraging these striking workers, giving them access to laws dealing with working class people. No, but what does this remind you of? This reminds you of the history of America back in the 30s when the people were trying to get organized in the auto industry, in the various industries. The AFL-CIO felt that was kind of below them, but thank God there was John L. Lewis and the UMW, United Mine Workers, and I think they paid something like 5,000 or 50,000 workers to go organize the auto industry, the steel industry, etc. And so there is light when we decide to put light on the issue. We need to force the unions, those people, the progressive institutions, people of like minds to support these struggles. All over the country, West Virginia, it's not the corporate unions. It is people saying no more. We must support those who say no more.
Lisa, do you want to give a little bit more before we continue on with our broadcast? And I want you to know that Maya Schoen, who brought you to our attention and to whom we will be eternally grateful, said that the strikers are seeking allies solidarity. So tell us what you want us to do. And again, we'll go into more detail on WBAI tomorrow night at 8 p.m.
Eastern
time, and that's 5 p.m. Pacifica time. Lisa, the mic is yours.
Great, thank you. And before I do that, we do have actually another strike leader on the line, Guillermo. Guillermo, if you can hear us, is there anything you want to add before we talk about how folks can support?
Thank you, Lisa. Yes. How's everybody doing? Thank you guys for your time and support that you guys are bringing to us and joining our fight. What everybody here has said is they touched on every point. So there's only very few things I would like to touch upon. The reason why we're doing this whole, I'm in a different facility than my other partner, Serafine. So it's also located around Bakersfield, but we're also having the same problems here with the minimum $1 after working 8 hours. This, like he said, the commissary is very expensive. Luckily, I'm blessed to have my family support, but not everybody in here does have that. So $1 a day does not really make a difference. And the reason why I even joined this fight is because not just for ourselves, but for the future generation and future people that are going to keep coming in through this detention centers, you know.
Well, that's certainly
incarcerated.
Yes. And this is what we are having our hopes on. The people here who understand and say no more, we're not going to take it, supporting those new people who are doing the actions. And one of the prison strikes, along with the teacher strikes, this is the future of America we look to support. And so thank you so much. See you tomorrow night, 99.5 on the FM down, 5 p.m. your time, and we will be spreading this word further. And think of what you're asking people to do by tomorrow night. Sister
Lisa,
Betty.
Did you want to give a closing words? And as I said, Jericho is on the mic. Their mic is open. I don't know if Sister Ann wants to respond now, but I know she is willing to take this issue up with National Jericho. Sister Ann Lamb is one of our major offices on National Jericho. She represents New York City Jericho. Go ahead, Lisa.
Great. Thank you so much. A real concrete thing that people can do is there is a fund to support the strikers, so people can donate. They can find that on the Internet. The website is kwesi.org/donate. Again, kwesi.org/donate. So folks can support there. Esperanza, real quickly, do you just want to talk about the support committee?
What happens after .org? What before donate?
kwesi.org/donate.
Got it. Thank you. Continue.
Yes, and then just for also for the audience, we are currently putting out an ask for all of the labor organizers who are out there and who want to get involved. They can also send an email to advocate@pangealegal.org. That's advocate@pangealegal.org. Advocate@pangealegal.org. Yeah.
One more time.
advocate@pangealegal.org. advocate@pangealegal.org. We're calling on labor organizers who want to get involved, who are able to support the strikers who are currently detained in Kern County. We're having a call on Thursday evening, so if you're out there and you're listening to us, feel free to reach out. We want to collaborate with all of you and make this a bigger campaign so that not just folks in the local community are able to hear what's happening, but also so that other people like ICE, the GEO group, and even our congressional representatives can hear our voices, the voices of folks who are currently detained and who can take action, because this issue has been going on for decades, and it's moment for us to take action and end it now.
Thank you for that so much. Sister
Betty. I want to say, because we have several of our political prisoners on this call, that one of our real warriors, Richard Williams, was a freedom fighter, and I mean a freedom fighter. He did not believe in nonviolence. He refused to work. He said, you know, I don't care what you offer me. I didn't come here to be your slave. And he absolutely refused to work. Can you verify that for me, Sister Ann?
Yes, that is true.
And so we've been on this path, and we will continue on this path with the assistance of the people who have just called in. Thank
you. What I'd like you to do is to Google the Louisiana United International, one of the worst prisons in the world, and that is what it is officially called,
Angola
Prison. There has been a struggle there for several years. The Supreme Court has said that over 2,000 to 6,000 of those people should be released because they were not
convicted. 12 votes.
They were not convicted with 12 votes as is demanded by the Constitution. And the state of Louisiana refuses to release them. And just as you are refusing to work for these corporations, in Louisiana, there are over 125 corporations that are responsible for making profit out of Angola Prison. So we recommend that you contact Louisiana United International. They are involved in a similar struggle. And as Sister Ann and some of the people on this call can tell you, there have been major strikes, especially in southern prisons in this country. So you are in good company, and you're getting into good trouble, and we just want you to be encouraged, and we hope that people will tune in tomorrow night on WBAI to hear the rest of this discussion. And we hope, if our technical abilities will allow, that you can call in. We're going to continue, and we want to thank Lisa, and we want to thank Esperanza, and Guillermo, and the rest of the team. And that's what I call you, team. You're our comrades now. Whether you like it or not, you're stuck with us.
Thank you so much.
Brothers and sisters, you heard that.
Thank you.
Live with it. And we are going to continue our program. Thank you again. See you tomorrow night.
All right. Without further ado, we're going to go to Brother Henry Hagan. We've missed him for a while. So we're going to open up his mic, if I can just get my screen back here, and we're going to ask him to share his words of wisdom. And we hope Brother Dennis and Sister Audrey, and we see a special guest, another Ann is on the line. We have quite a team waiting today. Go ahead, Brother Henry. Your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and Sister Ann and all our participants. Tonight I just want to briefly visit the heroic woman of defiance that I call Winnie Mandela, sharing you some of the quotes that she's left behind as a reminder of the need to continue the struggle. One, we have a shared destiny, a shared responsibility to save the world from those who attempt to destroy it.
Right on.
Two, to those who oppose us, we say, strike the woman and you strike the rock. Three,
okay.
I will not allow the system's efforts of my husband and his friends to be abandoned. I will continue the struggle for a free and equal South Africa. Four, they think because they have put my husband on an island, he will be forgotten. They are wrong. The harder they try to silence him, the louder I become. And then she says she identifies with the ideas of Malcolm X stood for. And she describes also her stint in prison. She says, those 18 months in solitary confinement bruised my soul. If I had had a weapon, I would have fought my way out. And then I also want to cite Nelson Mandela. To deny people their human rights is to challenge their very humanity. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you so much for that, because that really puts the cap on our internationalism. We are talking about justice for the world, justice for our home, justice abroad, and it lifts my spirits listening to those who have suffered so much tell us what their thoughts are.
All right, we're going to move right along. We're going to go to another warrior on the front lines, and I want to remind people that we've got some actions coming up. You know, on the 25th, all right, there's going to be Peace Wave. I want you to Google 24-hour Peace www.thegreatwave.org. There's going to be a global broadcast live, and some of the location for some of this activity is Sam Durant's on the Highline Spur, 10th Avenue and West 30th Street. We're asking people to Google that and see how you can fit in and support the Peace Wave. In addition to that, we're asking you to Google People's Panel for Educational Policy. This is June 23rd, People's Panel for Educational Policy. We are asking you to defend our New York City public school system from the people like the Gates and all the corporations that are trying to privatize our public schools. We're asking you to take back your schools from the mayor. The mayor has no right to deny us our democracy and educating our children. And so with that in mind, we're going to open up the mic of one of our staunch supporters of parents and community control and the human rights of education, Sister Audrey Dennis. Your mic is open, and we're asking Brother Dennis to stay in the loop because you're going to come on right after her. Sister Audrey, your mic is open.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, team. Audrey Dennis, terminated city worker from the Department of Education, volunteering with the New York City Coalition to finally end mayor control, also with Student Improvement Association and the Garveyite. And I am here to tell you that this mayor, he really is very incompetent. Recently in the New York Post, he was talked about that all city workers who have been terminated, he will take them back. He will take us back to work, but we must be vaccinated. Now, this man has been playing games with our lives, and this is the person you cannot have in control of our school with our impressionable minds. Because here this man gave Kyrie Irving, who is a nice young man, the pass to go to play ball, and also those baseball players without taking the vaccine. And why is it? And also those Broadway stars, they too didn't have to take the vaccine. But here he is forcing us to go and take the vaccine. And I just want to also say that the Roe versus Wade, he was saying that people's body, their choice. So for the vaccine, whose body is it? Is it his body? This man needs to be recalled. He needs to be taken off the podium because he's doing so much. Recently with this budget that was passed, I don't know how he and Adrian Adams had the nerve, the gall to say because others were not in the same thinking like him, like they just must go in like mind and vote like he wants them to vote. And when they didn't vote for this budget, they're taking money back from the communities, from the citizens, from the residents. Now, these people should not be in control. They're retaliating. So I'm asking you people out there that we have to wake up and support our children. We are the citizens. We are the residents. We're the taxpayers. He's taking money and giving to other communities and not us, black people, and other people who need it here in the United States of America. He's going overseas and giving it to Ukraine, and I'm just calling it like it is. Because right now I don't care because I'm a 29-year worker where this man came into office and he's not one time said, let me talk to these people to hear for myself what happened, why they were denied religious accommodation to work, why we were denied. Right now all these judges are in the courts who have had stocks in these Pfizer and Moderna, all these AstraZeneca, all this pharma, big pharma, they're all paid. So we don't need nobody in there who are not doing the work. And so we are calling them we are calling the citizens to join up with the New York City Coalition to finally end mayor control, because we have a better plan, and because we, the citizens, are the stakeholders, and we are going to do all that is best for our children. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that. And as I said earlier on in the program, could it be that the number of deaths in the Ukraine pale so greatly to the deaths in the Congo, Zaire, et cetera. And this is coming home to people in America who understand where they're misplacing the money. America that says it cannot afford a national health system. Sister Betty.
All right. We want to give Brother Dennis an opportunity to share some thoughts with us, who he's also very familiar with. Around Angola Prison, the Louisiana United International struggle to free close to 2,000, as high as 8,000 captives in Angola Prison. Brother.
Uhuru. Uhuru means freedom. Juneteenth is not yet Uhuru. There are a million Africans in the United States in prison. And remember, Malcolm said that's what America means, prison. And we're all up in prison. Just like all of the other immigrants that I was listening to on the call, we're in prison together. This system will not change. It is the modus operandi of the United States government to keep what? Colonialism alive. I'm going to read a portion tonight, and I'll finish it up next week. Africa, South Africa, this is from the African People's Socialist Party's Burning Spirit. The writer is Chairman Tafari Mugeri out of African People's Socialist Party in occupied Azania, which is South Africa as we call it. South Africa is a settler colony, no such thing as an African foreign national. A couple of years ago, South Africa, and I'm going to do part of this, and then I'll do the rest next week. A couple of years ago, South Africa neocolonial politicians openly referred to African people born outside of South Africa, occupied Zania, as foreigners. Now they have euphemized the term by referring to our people as foreign nationals. Apparently, the term foreign nationals is more respectful and accurate than foreigners. But we should ask the question, how can we be foreign nationals in our own land? In occupied Zania, Africans are called foreigners on African soil. On the other hand, white people, who are actual settlers and colonizers from Europe, are referred to as simply white, or Ngamia, boss, Boer, farmer, citizens, and other names that validate their position as conquerors. They always have some validation or justification for what they do, and then they make that the legal term when they occupy these settlers. It is true that African people are conquered people. We are a conquered nation. The objective conditions of African people in the many countries where we are given the assumption of being citizens prove the fact that we live under colonial domination. In occupied Zania, where there is a 7% population of white people and more than 80% Africans, the majority of our people live in squalor with rats and cockroaches, just like you mentioned about the prison. Just like these people who refuse to work are being put in a solitary confinement. My. Live in squalor with rats and cockroaches inside small houses made of corrugated iron and scraps of cardboard. When the government rolls out houses for the poor, the state of the houses does not come anywhere close to the kind of houses the settler colonizer population lives in. And in the Western Hemisphere, in the U.S., where the settler colonizer population makes up the majority, African people still live in squalor with rats and roaches throughout the projects. Right? Right. Erase the fake borders. The 55 countries in Africa came to being through the process of European powers attacking Africa and partitioning our land in order to share it amongst themselves. Like the country. How could one country that was named Africa, one country that wasn't even named Africa, deemed African by the colonizer, then be separated into colonies, right? One whole nation. It was a case of scavengers mercilessly tearing up their prey with the intention of eating everything, including the bones, from the foundation laid by our colonial enslavement through the transatlantic slave trade. Our entire landmass came under colonial occupation, the declaration of nominal independence and democracy. Listen to that, democracy. And the colonies did not make us suddenly graduate into citizens and members of the colonial forged nation. Chairman O'Malley Yeshitela has scientifically summed up the question of the nation on several occasions. Africans are a nation wherever we may be located in the world. Black people across the world are a nation. This is where colonialism has dispersed us across the sea. The different colonies we are trapped in do not constitute nations, but the separation of the African nation as part of the process of colonial domination, oppression, and exploitation of our people throughout the world. White people constitute the colonizer nation, and Africans constitute the colonized nation. The chairman states the European nation, and we do mean European, with its multiplicity of languages, classes, and international borders or internal borders, was born as a bourgeois nation, a white Christian nation, spawned through the blood and gore of slavery and colonialism and resting on a foundation of capitalism benefiting Europe at the expense of Africans and the rest of the world. And I will read
the
rest of the next week.
Could we end
yes.
it right there, and we will pick it up
yes.
next week?
Your cue was right on time. Your cue was right on time, Brother Ralph. I was going to end it right there.
Thank
you.
You so much.
We
have another guest. This is political prisoners. And we have a report. Your microphone is open, 1469.
Peace. Peace.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. Power to the people. This is Sekou Abdullah Odinga. I'm here to thank all of those who have supported the release of my brother, our comrade, Sundiata Okoli. He's home now with his family in their loving arms, trying to put these last 50 years behind him and to enjoy whatever years or days or months he has in front of him with his family. He's happy to be home. He's planning to be with his family and loved ones and to make the most of the years or days or whatever he has in front of him. So we thank him, all the folks who have worked so hard to bring him home. Those who want to support him can go to his
website, which you will find on the website of Jericho. Ann Lamb has that. Just go to the website and look up Sundiata Okoli, and you will see where to send your money. Thank you.
You can also go to Sundiata Okoli's defense, Sundiata Okoli AS. I'm sorry, I'm messing up his.
All right. That information. on the Jericho website. And with
yes.
that information, we're going to end our program appropriately with our theme with Nina Simone. And look to hear from you all next week and tomorrow night, 8 p.m., 99.5 on your FM dial. See you soon. Much love.
Brother Sunday, Brother Sekou Odinga, you never need to apologize. Everything you do is as far as we're concerned. And I'm sure
what we say, you have done the deed. And we are all grateful.
And we're sure Asada Shakur would agree with us. We will always be grateful to you.
Thank you so very much. And good night, my brothers and sisters.
Remember, check out the site for Jericho to find out more about Kandiata Akoli.
And more about all that we have been talking about this evening. We're going to ask Sister Ann to work on the program, putting all of the information that we've had tonight up on the website. Thank you and good night. Much love.
Remember to tune in to WBAI tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Thank you for your contribution.
To be